Let's return to Live from the State Capitol with Fred Dicker here on Talk 1300.
Here's how the New York Times in June played the story about Sandy Lewis. The state's legal pursuit of an upstate farmer, Salim B. Lewis, ended in lopsided defeat Thursday after the Adirondack Park Agency agreed to pay $72,000 in legal fees to Mr. Lewis. The settlement was the first time the agency, which was represented by the AG's office, has ever paid legal fees to a target of one of its enforcement actions. Sandy Lewis is a well-known figure in the Adirondacks. He's a hero to many. He's very controversial as well, and he's joining us right now from his home on a farm in the eastern edge of the Adirondacks. Good morning, Sandy. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Fred.
Great to have you. I saw the other day a story in the, I guess, at the Adirondack Enterprise about your sitting down with APA officials. That was sort of a story in and of itself, but you're also talking about an interesting business up in the Adirondacks that doesn't exist now, something known as an organic slaughterhouse, which, frankly, I never even heard of. If you would tell us about the meeting that you held and what it is that you're thinking that might be a good thing for the economics of the hard-pressed Adirondack citizenry.
Well, thank you for asking, Fred. The credit belongs to Senator Betty Little. And frankly, I think her efforts with the governor's office are worth mention as well, but you'd have to speak with her about that. She recognizes, as do a number of our neighbors, that grazing up here is an important asset. And grazing animals, which eat only grass, are very valuable. We've recently been given by the U.S. Department of Agriculture the only such accreditation. This farm is now the only farm or ranch in the nation which the USDA recognizes as grass-fed.
Hey, Sandy, can grass in and of itself provide all the nutrition? I assume the answer is yes, but can grass provide all the nutrition cattle need?
Yes, it can and should, and these animals actually get sick when they're fed grain. This is a dirty little secret of the beef business. Barley and corn are normally stuffed into these animals in feedlots throughout the nation, and when you eat them, you get sick too, but it just takes a long time. If you eat the grass-fed beef, and the grasses are good, ours are the best, you will get healthy, you will get omega-3, and hopefully you'll live forever. In the meantime, let me just address your question. The slaughterhouse, or abattoir, French word meaning to knock down, the slaughterhouse is needed in the park. And to my surprise, to Betty's pleasure, John Banta and the others who were attending the meeting indicated quite firmly, Arthur Lucy out of Lake Placid, that they would approve a petition or a request for a building permit or whatever they get over there and so forth. This is another leap for jurisdiction from the APA. What I said in response is, look, first, we haven't made a decision that we're going to do this. We'd like to do it, but no decision's been made here at this farm. Second, if we did it, we would want to serve the community. There isn't enough animal life here on this farm. We get 200 beef head a year and so forth. Not enough to survive as a slaughterhouse. And last, we'd like to be able to eat off the floor in this slaughterhouse. And anything that wasn't used by the butchers would be sold to an outfit in West Utica, and it ends up all around the planet. The hides go to China and Italy and God knows what else out of Miami. Nothing's left over unless you want it. So there's no reason in the world not to build it. But the problem was, and we distributed a memo written on July 10th last year by John Banta, the counsel at the APA, which says farm use versus farm service. This little bit of mental gymnastics or chicanery is the APA's effort to gain control over a farm slaughterhouse. If we build a farm slaughterhouse for our farm, they can't touch it. But if we build a farm slaughterhouse and share the capacity of that slaughterhouse with the other farms in this region, they can come in and assert jurisdiction, they say. If we bought up all the farms in the North Country, 60,000 acres on clay, which has been suggested to us by the Cornell Cooperative lady, they wouldn't touch us because it'd be one farm. But if we offer from our farm to the 60,000 acres that other farmers have and simply say, bring your animals over here, we'll slaughter them for you, they can claim we're farm service, not farm use, and try to shut us down, which is what they're threatening to do.
Now, let me just, before we pursue that a little bit more, let me just ask you about your use of the phrase organic slaughterhouse. I never heard of such a thing. What does that mean?
Well, there are slaughterhouses that aren't organic, and there are slaughterhouses which are. Presently, 3 hours, 4 hours, and 6 hours, we can reach the three organic slaughterhouses in this region. One is in Troy, Pennsylvania, one is in Athol, Mass., A-T-H-O-L, and one is in Westminster, Vermont. Those are it. There are two others, but they don't amount to much.
What are they? What is, I mean, organic means, chemically.
No poisons, right. No drugs. We don't kill to grow. Organic is the absence of stuff. It's not anything you add. It's simply stuff you don't do.
But I understand that with farming. But what is an organic slaughterhouse? I mean,
well, the organic program, the National Organic Program, is established by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, provides for organic restaurants, organic slaughterhouses, and organic processors.
Let me ask you, what does an organic slaughterhouse have that an inorganic one doesn't have?
It has care and a prophylaxis process which prevents the carcasses of the organic farmer from being in any way influenced by the carcasses of the farmer that's not organic. So they hang separately and they're slaughtered separately. Usually they go on first thing in the morning to the kill floor and move through the process into freezers and are held separate in coolers and whatnot.
Right.
They're all handled separately. It's a process of separation. In our case here, what I would like to do, but again, I'm not saying I'll do it, Fred, what I'd like to do is establish a slaughterhouse which actually has different kill floors. One kill floor would be used, as would all the coolers and everything else on common infrastructure, to handle the animals which are organic and grass-fed. These animals tend to have a lot less health issues. The E. coli disasters that you hear about don't come from grass-fed animals. They come from grain-fed animals. Everybody knows this, but the beef industry won't report it, and nor will the New York Times. They sit on their hands on this when they're scared stiff. The bottom line is, grass-fed is healthy, grain-fed is not in a grazing animal. It's that simple.
Right.
So if you want an organic slaughterhouse that only handles organic beef, you're going to starve to death. You have to handle both, or you don't have enough throughput.
Yeah.
Maybe someday there'll be enough throughput to justify a pure organic house, but there isn't today.
Sandy, I'm just curious, how do they kill these animals? Is it a bolt in the head the way they often do, I think, in commercial slaughterhouses?
Well, I go to the kill floor, Fred, with each of our animals. I've been doing this now for some time, and I'll be 73 in January. It's absolutely crazy. It's a little 22 bullet that pushes a plunger,
right,
which penetrates a little section of the cow's forehead and basically stuns the cow. The cow is organically alive, if you want to say it that way. I don't mean it that way, but it's the heart's still beating, but the brain is essentially dead, at which point they're bled out. And every single process, all the bits and pieces, the blood and all the rest of it that comes from the animal, is stored and used on this planet.
Total recycling.
Yeah. No problem for the so-called guys who are worried about pollution. But I might add, quite a lot of the stuff that isn't used, forget the hides and so forth, but quite a lot of this stuff is very useful for compost.
Sure. Sandy, let me ask you just to step back a bit. I mean, your battle with the APA, which you were successful in winning, really had a lot to do with illustrating for a great many people what seems to be a great hostility that in the past came from the APA when it came to local people living in the Adirondacks trying to make a living. What's your sense of whether or not your success in court, and it was an extraordinary success, in any way has changed the thinking, the culture at the APA?
Fred, I wish I could give you good news. I don't believe anything has changed at the APA, but I do believe there are some people at the APA who would like to see it change. The question turns on where the APA's orders come from. And presently, they're coming from the governor's office. I personally believe they're coming from Robert Rosenthal, who moved with this governor from the Attorney General's Office, Environmental Division. I think he issues the orders, and I think he's in hiding. He's the guy who lied in government print on government stationery in 1999, saying that our $50,000 personal gift to Trout Unlimited, the check was handed to a pediatrician in Glens Falls named John Braco. That gift was solicited by Anita Deming at the Cornell Cooperative, and quote-unquote, she said, it'll make the APA feel better. They were in the business of attacking us then, too. So we gave the gift personally. We sent a letter to this guy, and I believe I've sent you a copy. That letter stated to Mr. Rosenthal, as an assistant attorney general, Environmental Protection Bureau, I can give you his phone number.
That would have been under Elliot Spitzer, right?
I'm not sure, but
Spitzer was the AG.
And I spoke with him many times.
Yes.
He and a guy named Rocky Piagione, another gumshoe who's now working for the feds, is completely useless. These guys tried to criminalize a ditch that was serviced 6 weeks after our son Oliver died. It was the most obscene gesture I've ever seen in government. Sandy, Rosenthal now works for Cuomo, and he issues the orders over the AGs, over the APA, the DEC, and Ag and Markets.
The incident you cite, though, was 12 years ago. I mean, is there anything?
It is 12 years ago, but the influence continues to this day. And you don't have to ask me about it. Try Mr. Rosenthal. Call him to your microphone, see what he's got to say.
Is it animus towards you, do you think, or is it just hostility to any development in the Adirondacks?
Well, perhaps both. I can't say for sure how another man feels. I know how I feel. I think Mr. Rosenthal is a loathsome individual who does not belong in government, and he's a liar. Right. It's as simple as that.
Just talking about the APA, though, and the needs in the Adirondack Park, how many, do you know approximately how many farmers besides yourself are in the park, and how many animals might be available for slaughter should you get the okay to go ahead with an organic slaughterhouse?
Well, we'd get the okay. The APA told us that, Fred. All I have to do is apply. But an application wasn't necessary for farm workers' housing, and it isn't necessary for a slaughterhouse. Mm. It simply isn't. The only question becomes whether it becomes necessary if you service other people's animals.
No, I understand that. How many
potential throughout the park? You have 6.5 million acres.
Right.
You have 135,000 residents. If you wanted me to count farmers, I would refer you to the Farm Bureau, and I've done that. I've actually asked them, and I've asked the various cooperative extensions. Nobody seems to know.
Okay.
But as for big farms, our size growing beef, we're it.
Yeah.
But can there be others? My God, yes. And there's plenty of young guys out there and plenty of families out there who have 5, 10, 15 cows in the backyard kind of thing on 100 acres. There's no reason why they couldn't combine.
Sure.
We don't want to buy 50,000 acres. Our view is to help others get off the ground, give them a proper slaughterhouse so they don't have to truck these animals, five-hour rides back and forth. It's too expensive.
Sandy, what about the use of cooperatives, which have been always a major feature of modern agriculture, really starting from the mid-19th century maybe? Would the APA accept and license, do you think, a cooperative slaughterhouse?
Well, that was raised by Anita Deming of the Cornell Cooperative, and it was raised by John Banta, I think, and perhaps two or three others at the meeting on the 25th. This was a meeting between 10 and noon at the APA, as chaired by Betty Little and by the executive director of the APA, a gal named, I think it's Martino. At the end of the day, I responded, Fred, and maybe I'm not a team player, but my response was, forget it. These things are tough to run. I think a camel is a horse designed by a committee. We do not want a complex administrative process, and God sakes, I don't want government money, and farmers don't have any money, so then comes the question, can we put something together which would serve equitably all farmers, and the answer is yes.
Well, seems fair enough. Before I let you go, let me ask you about one other thing that I think we talked about the last time you joined us, but if not, maybe the time before that, but it has to do with coverage in the Adirondacks of your success in taking on the APA, the issues that were involved. I know North Country Public Radio has covered you extensively, but is it still the case, as you had said the last time, that that the public radio station down here in Albany, WAMC, has not reported on your legal case and your success in dealing with the APA?
Fred, it's even funnier than that. Shartok, I met him once years and years ago. We sent the plane for him and flew him into Rockport, Maine. We were his largest donors. We were the donor behind the $50,000 gift when Dr. Axelrod was stricken, and Alan named WCEL after our firstborn grandchild, Chloe Elizabeth Lewis. But this little guy doesn't believe in covering this incident.
So it still hasn't
doesn't cover anything. And I have called him, and I have sent emails to his people. I've sent emails to all members of his staff, and his response was to call the ISP that services our emails and have it shut down. This guy believes in selective disclosure. And I would refer you to Scott Ritter.
And I already mentioned Scott Ritter and Shartok, but there still has been...
Shartok is basically a type. He threatened me with litigation if I raised his name as I'm doing now. Well, Alan Shartok, you're hearing it here. Come and get me. I just can't wait. At the end of the day, National Public Radio should be ashamed of this guy's performance. It's just awful. And North Country Radio, which you gave a compliment to, I have an exception with those guys. The fellow there named Brian Mann sent me an email and asked to meet with me in August or early September. He was going to do a piece on the APA and current changes. I responded. I responded in spades. I said, come ahead.
Sure.
But he never showed up. Hmm. And the reason he doesn't show up is because I personally take exception to what he did in our first encounter when I mentioned to the Adirondack Local Government Review Board that the number one health issue in the North Country is incest. And there's no question that's the case. This is something he decided to make a big stink about. It got Danny Hakim of the New York Times upset, who said, called me up and said, did you say this? You bet your life I said it, and it's a problem. I've dealt with it personally. Yeah. So at the end of the day, here's Brian Mann begging for time from me. When he gets it, and I sent Ellen Rocco, who's his boss, a copy of what I sent him. I said, come on ahead. But you know, Fred, unlike you, these guys like to edit selectively. And I get a little sick of that routine. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with asking an honest man a question and then printing or publishing his answer. That's not the way they do it at North Country Public Radio.
It seems to me the Glens Falls Post-Star has been doing a very good job in covering the Adirondacks in recent years. Do you agree with that?
I do. I think this reporter there, Will Doolittle, who's went to Stanford and whose father ran the Adirondack Daily Enterprise, has been well-trained. I think his newspaper has guts, real guts. I mean, they're the ones that turned Schneiderman on his ear and forced these guys away from this effort to suppress Judge Meyer's last three decisions. This is something, by the way.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, but this was unbelievable, and our own counsel was involved. Our counsel turned against us and went with the Attorney General's office and did so without a comment. And I know perfectly well how it happened. There's no secrets in Wall Street. I mean, these guys talk. So at the end of the day, it was disgusting, and that's something we had to put up with. Incidentally, when it was first suggested, our farm counsel, Martina Bailey, said, do it.
Sandy, we're just about out of time, but let me know what Sandy's referring to is that in order to get a settlement with Sandy Lewis and the Adirondacks, the Attorney General's office and APA were trying to get him to agree that there would be no precedent
rule. No, they were going to suppress the decision.
Which has the effect of eliminating a precedent, so it couldn't be used as another...
Yeah, but it would be like they never occurred.
I understand that, and you would have been paid off. They were offering
they
you money if you would have accepted that.
$71,690.28 to shut up and go home.
Sandy, I know you don't shut up and you don't go home, but you are at home and you're fighting for your home. We're just out of time. We've got to run. Sandy Lewis, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
I commend you.
Take care. This is Fred Dicker live at the State Capitol. We'll be right back after the break.